Hudson News Network. This is Legion of News.
Greetings to you, fellow Portlanders. From high above the milk. Do I sound reverberated to you?
You sound very echoey.
That's awesome. Hold on a second. I suspect, though I cannot prove, that someone, and his name rhymes with Heg Hibbler, may have left the reverberation channel open here. Let's try that one more time. Hello, Don Taylor.
Hello.
That's awesome. That does make you sound even more authoritative. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can turn down the effects mix on that. Just one second. What say you now?
I'm afraid to talk.
There we go. All right, fantastic.
Does that mean the stuff we were recording earlier is going to all sound like I'm inside a cave?
I believe so.
Awesome.
All right, it's fantastic.
That's what I get for not having my headphones on while I was actually reading.
You and me both, sister, and this is my alleged career. From high above the milk packing district in the part of town we call beautiful Southeast Portland, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, readying a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, information on the following.
Pipe bombs are found in a motel in Woodburn. Government officials release documents about Afghanistan. And the hot, sunny weekend meant that several people drowned.
Well, there you go. As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, please pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely... Wow, that's loud. This is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, July 26, 2010. A routine traffic stop in Woodburn last June 3rd led to the eventual discovery Saturday of a pipe bomb in a motel room along 99E. Police had pulled over William E. Fennick and learned he had an outstanding warrant out of New Hampshire for threat of bomb, according to Sergeant John McCullough of the Woodburn Police Department.
Threat of bomb.
That apparently is a thing.
Okay.
Threat of bomb.
It's not really like a page out of Strunk and White, but what are you going to do?
Extradition proceedings were then put in place to return him to that state. As part of it, Fennick contacted the Woodburn Inn to retrieve his bags. That motel is one that serves longer-term guests, McCullough said, so it was not unusual for no employees to enter a room for an extended number of days. A person went into the room to retrieve his bags, found a pipe with end caps on it, and called the police. A bomb squad was called in, and police closed 99E between Highway 211 and 214 for several hours. The device was detonated, but was not actively set to explode.
When they talk about being a hotel that serves, I'm sorry, probably a motel that serves longer-term guests, is this one of those, this is sort of the, this is the opposite of the by-the-hour motel, but it seems to serve much the same purpose. Which is that folks who perhaps either have no home to which they're going or are engaging in activities which it might not be suitable for home use.
That is true.
I'm not saying that's the case with him, although clearly it is because he's, you know, because he has bombs.
I believe back in the olden days, they were sometimes called flop houses. But now they're just motels, so I don't think they call them that.
There used to be one of those places downtown that it seemed very much like one of those sort of Elwood Blues type joints where it was like, you know, you paid like $7 a day or something, and there was the communal shower down the hall where you had to pay an extra nickel for soap.
They call them residential hotels. We actually have those in Portland where you see
Downtown? Is that what I'm...
Yeah, and when you drive by one of these places and it's like sort of wedged in the middle of a block and
right.
It says something hotel, and you'll see a bunch of really skanky old men sitting in chairs out in front.
And you can't quite tell if it's a homeless shelter or not. You know, it looks like it might be a rehab joint. It might be a motel.
Yeah.
You know, they're not really ever clear about it. I have this sort of perverse fascination with places like that. So I've always wanted to stay in one just for a night, just to sort of see what it's like. But I imagine that the illustrious reality would not measure up to the to my image.
Probably the smells and the gunshots would alarm you too much. It'd be like one of those horror movies where, like, you get paid to spend the night with the ghost. You know, if Rick Emerson can make it till dawn, you know, we'll give him $100.
It's one of those things where just constantly being woken up and kept awake by the sound of a guy power hosing blood off the sidewalk.
Pretty much.
All right, here's Dawn Taylor, ladies and gentlefolk.
Well, the charges based on the Woodburn incident for the pipe bomb thing were pending. Mikola said he did not know the circumstances of Fenix charges in New Hampshire. He does have an unusual tattoo on his chest, an Eye of Providence that includes the pyramid found on the back of the $1 bill. There's a picture of him. He's a fine-looking man, too.
Oh, this looks like this is the guy who brands you and then rapes you in prison.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, except you know what he kind of looks like? Who is the guy from that 70s show who's also Clarence Boddicker in RoboCop?
Oh, not Terry O'Quinn.
Not Terry O'Quinn. He's the stepfather. But you know that guy,
Red Foreman on that 70s show.
Yeah, his name escapes me at the moment.
Damn it.
Now it escapes me. I work for Dick Jones. That guy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in any event, this is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
U.S. government officials are rapidly responding to Sunday's release of thousands of classified military documents dealing with the war in Afghanistan. State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley says the leak by a whistleblower website poses a possible threat to national security.
Disclosure.
State Department joins the White House and DOD in condemning the disclosure of classified information by WikiLeaks.
I just like the idea that a guy had to say the phrase WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks.
And it's part of the national news discourse. See, even I feel silly saying it. It's an actual website. It's like I felt silly saying Wikipedia for the first couple of months that I was aware of its existence, just because it seems silly. It sounds like a thing for children. So what is poetry? What is WikiLeaks? I mean, it's a way, you know, it's some sort of communal whistleblower disclosure website, right? Where there's sort of where you can publish stuff that maybe you ought not be publishing.
Yes.
But I mean, but that being said, like, what is it? Who runs it? Where does it reside?
Well, I'm not sure who runs it. I mean, the whole point of it being a wiki is that anyone can contribute to it. And they publish and allow people to make comments on leaked documents about, like, government and corporate.
Yeah, but there's some
things.
Guy who runs it, obviously. Like,
somebody
must own it.
Yes.
It must be, I mean, is it, in other words, is it like an American website? Is it a British website? Does it reside on Sealand? I always went, well, because, in other words, if it's some guy in America and he's just publishing crap that the government doesn't want you to publish.
I would imagine he probably wouldn't want you to know who he is.
But it's not like that information's hard to get, though. I mean, how difficult could it be for the government to find out who runs a website? So it must, by definition, not be in the United States, because that guy be in a black bag being beaten with sticks right now. There's just no.
Well, I can't get it to open right now because I assume probably, like, you know, far more people than have ever traveled to this website before are now visiting it.
Aren't they the ones who, didn't they also publish or post that footage, I don't know, like maybe a year or so ago? It might not have been that long ago. I might be confusing my war atrocity footage. Some video that came out like maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 months ago. It's like 17 minutes of U.S. forces like machine gunning guys in Iraq or something.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, but see, as I'm saying, it all just blurs together. Mm. One mass slaying is pretty much the same as another, really. All right. Well,
Crowley says the thousands of pages of leaked documents have the potential to do harm.
This is harm.
The fact that these are, in many cases, documents that are several years old does not change our concern that this action risks our national security.
Who is this guy talking right now?
This is State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley.
All right. Well, I instinctively disbelieve everything he says. I have no real reason for that, no rational underpinning for it.
Sure you do. He's a State Department spokesman.
There you go. I take it back. I have every reason to disbelieve him. I'm not trying to be a dope about this. I'm not trying to be deliberately obtuse, as I sometimes say. But I have no idea exactly what the harm is. Are we secretly going to Are we secretly going to war under false pretenses and nobody told the American people and now that information might come out? Or is the war perhaps not going well and they're afraid that we were under the impression that things were going swimmingly? I don't really understand. We're basically fighting, and not successfully, it seems to me, but we're basically like fighting the guys from Planet of the Apes, right? I mean, we're basically fighting guys with sticks on horseback. So I don't really understand exactly what the danger is of information coming. I'm not trying to sound daft,
well,
but I mean...
the military and the State Department take much the same attitude that, say, like, you know, the Disney Corporation does and such.
No!
Where it's like, we are... And George Lucas.
Yeah.
You know, we are going to be in complete control of all information. And if they ever let slip even a little bit... You know, that's this slippery slope that all of a sudden you never know. Now suddenly everybody's just going to know everything.
They just, in theory, they don't like to have anything get out.
Right.
Maybe this is what Toby Ziegler would call it's the small potatoes theory, that they like to control the small potatoes because there are bigger potatoes lurking somewhere, and they want to know that that the system in place to protect those potatoes is impenetrable and impregnable.
Exactly.
All right. Because, I mean, it seems like we're fighting a not terribly successful war against, like, the cast of the Flintstones right now. And, you know, and have been for some time. So I don't really know that they've got the latest space-age technology to be perusing WikiLeaks. But, what do I know? All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
A life flight helicopter was sent to Rooster Rock Park on the Columbia River Saturday after swimmers there reported an apparent drowning. Some of those swimmers apparently pulled a 4-year-old boy named Amin Abu from the river. Medics tried to revive him, but Abu was later declared dead. At about the same time, on the Toutle River in Cowlitz County, a 24-year-old man drowned while trying to swim across the river. That happened at 3:15 p.m., a half mile west of the Tower Bridge. They say Jordan Connors of Silver Lake, Washington, tried to swim across the 40-yard-wide stretch of river. He nearly made it. He was last seen alive trying to grasp some offshore rocks.
Was alcohol believed to be a factor?
I don't see that, but, you know, again, hot, sunny weekend, people on the river, 24-year-old, quite possible.
40 yards is 120 feet, which doesn't seem... That's the thing about rivers, is they're deceptive. I never know how this works. Are they deceptively wide or deceptively narrow? In other words, if it seems like it's not that far, but then you get about halfway across, you go, damn, this sucks, you know, and then later you're dead. Is that deceptively narrow or deceptively wide?
I don't know.
See?
Now that you mentioned it.
That's what I'm saying. It's one of those things like quite a lot and quite a few. How can those both mean the same thing? Mm-hmm. It makes no sense at all. So, God, I pity anyone who's trying to learn English as a second language, you poor bastards. But that's one of those things where you're standing on one bank and looking at the other bank, and your buddy on the other side is waving to you and says he's got a corona if you can make it across. You know, maybe just say no, or just, what are those things they have now? Boats. Use one of those. Or you can swim, but it seems like that's destined to work out poorly for most of you.
Well, Friday night, divers recovered the body of a 55-year-old man from the Willamette River. It was believed to be the same man who had previously been seen on a surfboard in the river.
Who would surf well, I guess this guy.
A woman reported seeing a man on the river earlier in the evening. A short time later, the board was still there, but the person on it was gone. And a search was launched in the area, earlier Friday, boaters on the Columbia River called 911 after finding the body of 31-year-old Andrew Zagaria of Vancouver. Multnomah County deputies say the victim was wearing diving gear when his body was discovered near the boat ramp at Northeast 42nd and Marine Drive.
Well, that's just weird if he was wearing diving gear. Wait, was he in the water or was he on the deck?
He was in the water.
All right, well, I have no idea what that's about, but why would you be on a surfboard in the Willamette River? I mean, first of all, you can't surf in the Willamette River, it seems to me, unless you're unless you're doing some weird surfing meet skiing jive where you're being towed behind a boat, which I guess you could. Also, it's filled with poo, so, I mean, it seems like that might be an ill-advised activity on at least two levels, possibly three if you factor in the fact that you might, you know, die, so.
He might have been windsurfing. But it does say surfboard, not windsurfing.
Yeah, and I mean, and again, a surfboard, and because I think it's all connected. Have you ever done this? Have you ever gone, driven down the gorge during the summer and just sat there and watched all those guys who were out there doing windsurfing?
Yeah.
It's messed up.
That's just crazy.
It's terrifying. I mean, you know, God love them. It's a big world with lots to do, but there's any number of activities like that I just find absolutely horrifying to watch. Because I just instinctively, no matter how much I don't want to, I project myself into the middle of the action. And all I can just see is Drowning seems like a bad way to go. I'll put it that way. There's lots of bad ways to die. Drowning seems especially unpleasant. They always say, well, it's over soon. But that's one of those relative... That's one of those Einstein time elongates sort of things. It seems like drowning is one of those... One of those ways to go that's just going to seem like it takes a lot longer than it actually does. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to go that way. Here's Don Taylor.
I'm trying to pick and choose news here because it's like I have a stack that is just full of death and sadness. And so there has to be, you know, I got to change this up here and there.
It's almost amazing we don't have a sounder for that. All right.
I know. How about this one? Just to lighten things a bit. Traffic on Interstate 495 south of Middleboro, wherever Middleboro is, because I don't have that on this paper, was slow moving Sunday evening after three Shetland ponies decided to take a stroll along the highway. State police said the animals escaped from a nearby farm and somehow made their way over to the highway near Exit 3. They're a bunch of hellions, said Bill Morgan, the owner of Lady Fancy and Shadow.
Nothing from Lady Fancy and Shadow, by the way, can appropriately be classed as a hellion. Shetland ponies, aren't they tiny?
They're very
small. Aren't they miniature?
They are small little ponies.
They're like that. They're like that. They're like that mini horse on the. What the hell was that show? Robin Big on MTV? Never mind. Mm. A pony is small. A pony is basically a tiny horse.
Yes.
And so this is a tiny pony.
Right.
So one can imagine. So these are basically horses the size of a...
And they have a lot of hairy mane stuff going
on. It's
like
three sort of medium-sized dogs wandering along the side of the road.
But Bill Morgan, owner of Lady Fancy and Shadow, says they're mischievous. Or mischievous, depending on how you want to pronounce that word. There's always one in the pack that's a ringleader, and they seem to follow this black and white one here, Shadow, the troublemaker. The trio somehow managed to open a back gate and head straight for the highway. Troopers had to stage an old-fashioned roundup to get the ponies loaded into a van and back to their corral. Morgan has four miniature horses. He said all had been mistreated and malnourished when he rescued them. None of the animals were injured during the ordeal, and he was happy to get them all home safe and sound.
Lady Fancy and Shadow sounds like some terrible disco band that would have opened for Climax back, you know.
I think that was Chaka Khan's original band.
just produced by Rick James. All right. Don't forget, you can be listening to Legion of News on your handheld device. It is mobile.pdx.fm, mobile.pdx.fm, and this program is also available archived later on in the day right here at pdx.fm and on iTunes as well as at legionofnews.com. This is Daunted. We're not going to be going back to the sadness pile all day long, are we?
I'm going back to the sadness pile. Well, I got to alternate between the sadness pile and the happiness news.
Don't we have a pile that's labeled ludicrous or at least awkward? How about something that's just, labeled disgusting?
Let's try this one. A crane fell on an Olive Garden restaurant in Camden County, New Jersey on Friday morning.
I like what we're saying.
The incident happened around 9:30 a.m. at the Voorhees restaurant. Authorities say the crane was being used to help a crew working to replace the rooftop air conditioning unit. Investigators are still working to determine why the crane became unbalanced and fell into the building. The view from a news helicopter showed the crane appeared to still be attached to the unit, and the crane was off its wheels and suspended in the air. Olive Garden officials say they're currently assessing any potential damage to the roof, and if everything checks out, they were hoping to open for dinner.
See, here's the thing about that story that's terrifying.
There's a picture of the crane.
This is just wrong. Because I find, like a lot of people, I find cranes, especially the massive kind that they use to build skyscrapers, I find those things just terrifying. There's that crane that it seems like it's been there for like 5 years now. You can see it if you're going west over the Ross Island Bridge, and it's sort of, if you're going over the Ross Island Bridge, it's sort of straight ahead off a little bit to your right, like at around 2 o'clock or so. And it's this crane that just sort of looms up. I don't think it's not being used to build the stuff down like the OHSU stuff down by the river. It's it's on like toward the West Hills somewhere. But that crane freaks me out on any number of levels. Here's one of the reasons. Because the crane, and you know, it sort of, you know, it goes up and then it goes out. So there's the sort of beak of the crane that extends out from which the little hook or the pulley or whatever it is sort of dangles down. But the part of the crane that juts out, I don't know what that part is called, but the extended part that sort of goes straight out horizontally lights up different colors for different holidays. And in fact, in December, it'll actually say like Merry Xmas or whatever in Christmas lights. So my thing is, How do they do that? Like, do they do that all on the ground? Do they bring it all the way down to the ground somehow to decorate it? Or is there some...
No, they get guys that go up there and do stuff on
the
crane.
See, that's what I want to... There ought to be some documentary that follows the poor bastard that has to do that. Or the guy that has to climb to the top of those radio towers and fix that light bulb that's always at the top.
Or the bridges here. You know, even... Have you ever seen workers, like, up at the top doing stuff
no.
up at the top of the bridge?
No,
yeah,
I
have it's
not.
Terrifying.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, there's a... there was somebody who stole, when I was growing up, there was somebody who stole the American flag that was on top of one of the bridges in Kennewick. There's this thing called the Blue Bridge that goes over, and it's... there was this, and I guess most bridges have a flag of some kind that flutters sort of near the top, but this was right at the top in the middle of the bridge. It was at the apex, the literal highest point. And some ne'er-do-well just scaled up there in the middle of the night, in a rainstorm, no less, skulking along under cover of darkness, and stole this flag off the top of the bridge. And I think successfully, because I think they caught him later on. And I just cannot imagine how stupid or drunk or high or some combination of those you would have to be. But yeah, the guy that has to climb all the way to the top of the bridge or the radio tower, or any of those broadcasting towers or anything like that is just...
At the top of the hill right above where I lived, like a block and a half from my house growing up, there was a water tower. And we would climb the fence and go into the little water tower park, which was very nice at night. My friends and I in high school, you know, to do the shenanigans that the kids do.
By which
at
you
night.
Mean boozing.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
And I would always have a couple of friends that would decide that it was a good idea to climb up the water tower.
It's not a good idea
and
to climb anything like
I
that.
I never did, because no matter, you know, how much marijuana I had smoked or how much peppermint schnapps I had ingested, my fear of falling off of things was still too great.
That actually was that was funny enough that I actually knocked my hand into the soundboard here and temporarily halted the teletype. Would you like to know something disturbing? And I know the answer is yes.
Yes.
Okay. Here's something disturbing. They don't say this publicly. This is one of those things that the news chooses not to report, and that radio stations choose not to apprise people of. But a couple times a year, they will actually find some guy that decided to off himself by climbing to the top of one of the radio broadcast towers, like up in the hill here, like up in Sylvan. Because those radio towers are very high, and there's a ladder that goes all the way to the top, and it's not like the ladder can ever be removed. It's like a fire escape. It's bolted on. So I think there's like a little fence or something. But that's just one of those things where they just sort of, you know, that's one of those things where they figure, like, if you really want to be climbing to the top of that, like, that's on you. That's they're not going to make it that hard. They figure that most people, it's not a thing you're accidentally going to climb. So it's not that difficult to get up onto a radio tower. But a couple times a year, they will find someone who has plummeted from one of the radio towers. But here's the sort of twist ending to that, is it usually doesn't work out the way they expected. What usually happens is, and you kids at home, just take a lesson from Uncle Rick on this. If you're going to kill yourself, that's not the way to do it. Because your death will be unpleasant and it'll be protracted. And here's why. Because you think that you're going to climb all the way to the top and then you're going to jump off. What happens is you get about halfway up and then all of the radiation coming off the tower actually just begins to cook you and then you fall. And then you spend the last hour of your life, crawling across sagebrush like a guy in an Eastpak backpacks ad, you know, backpack ad, you know, you just don't want to do that. And then they will call the radio station, and the chief engineer has the job of going out and, like, poking the guy with a stick and seeing if he's dead and then calling the sheriff and having him come pick him up. He's like, once, twice a year, you'll get a call at a radio station. Yeah, some other guy fell off the tower. And then, you know, and then they play evens or odds to see who has to go out and, check up on him. Here's Don Taylor.
Police took a man into custody Saturday after witnesses said he tried to rub up against joggers on Portland's waterfront running and biking path.
This isn't the Nike rubber.
I don't think so. Although, you know, I don't know. It might turn out that he is the same guy, but this is a different incident. James McNeil, 29, had his pants down when he approached at least two women Saturday near the Hawthorne Bridge at about 11 a.m.
Wait, he wasn't a cyclist.
No.
Okay, so I guess I was immediately conflating this with the Nike thing and somehow thinking he was... Because that was going to be impressive. He was bicycling with his pants down.
Witnesses said McNeil was touching himself and trying to rub up against the women. A group of bystanders chased and tackled him, police said, and held him down until police could arrive. A police spokeswoman said nearby firefighters and officers were both called to a report of a fight. They arrested McNeil once they reached the group. Portlanders who use the waterfront running path said they're happy to hear someone stepped in to help. Matt Harper, who was walking on the waterfront Sunday, said, "I personally wouldn't have gone near anybody who was really exposing themselves, but I'm glad they did their civic duty and took down the pervert. That's just not cool."
Yeah, I'm not going to be tackling a naked man if it's all the same to you. Where was this at? This was at the... This is in the waterfront, like down here?
Yeah.
Like on the Esplanade or whatever?
Yeah, by the Hawthorne Bridge.
All right. And he was just walking along with his pants down?
Apparently so.
You'd think you'd see that guy coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In other words, the guy's walking towards you with his junk out. That's a thing you'd say, "Oh, maybe I'll step to the left."
Well, maybe he was lurking, like near the foot of the bridge somehow.
Oh, he wasn't on the
when
bridge.
When people were coming. Yeah, no, this happened on the waterfront path.
Oh, I see.
It was so like if you're under the bridge.
Okay, so you're on that windy little path that sort of goes parallel to the river.
Yeah.
I guess. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of hiding places down there. And also, you know, if you're that guy, you're running the risk of a really unpleasant sunburn as well. But I suppose it's just, it's a game of inches at that point. You'll pardon the pun.
It was early in the day, though. It was 11 a.m. I'm sure by the time the afternoon sun came out, he intended to be gone by the time the real heat of the day.
I don't understand the guys who, I know that there probably, it's not even, I was going to say it's not a sexual thing, it clearly is, but in other words, it is not a conventionally sexual behavior, it is a mental behavior. In other words, the gratification there is all psychological as opposed to physical, probably, so maybe that explains it, because I never get the guys who just... Because you hear these stories every now and again, like a woman is leaving like a Costco, and there's a guy who just sits in the Costco parking lot all day with his pants off, like in his car, and he'll say, "Miss, could you come over here and tell me the time?" And then she gets over there, and it's like, there's his business, you know, and like that's his whole day. And
well,
then he, you know.
I think it's like guys who make phone calls, random dirty phone calls. It's
do people do that anymore?
I don't know.
The obscene phone
I think
call?
Now that you don't have landlines, I don't know. I don't ever hear about that happening, but I know that. I discovered as a teenager, for some reason I got a few of them, that if you didn't actually respond with fear or disgust, they'd get annoyed and they'd hang up.
Maybe it's because they suspected that you were drunk and stoned most of the time.
That's it, yes. Right. And not climbing high things, though. But I think it's about, it's kind of a power thing, because when they shock a woman and get an unhappy, upset response from the woman, that's where the excitement
is. That
lies.
The thing is, they want you to be horrified.
Yeah, they want a reaction.
They say, "Look at this," and you shriek and run away, and then they say, "Ha ha, I've showed her."
Exactly.
Whereas if you just go, "Yeah, it's unimpressive in every way,"
right.
They kind of go, "Well, okay," and then it's going to skulk off. All right.
Exactly.
Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Well, let's do a little science news.
Here's your science on the march for Monday, July 26th, 2010, right here in Legion of News.
People with dark skin seem to think that they're not at risk for getting melanoma, the deadliest type of skin cancer. But Dr. Flor Mayoral says people of color usually don't realize they have melanoma until it's too late.
What is this?
Likely.
This is one of those cuts that I think I actually forgot to title. All right, here we go. I'm sorry. This is completely failed to one.
When they do go to the doctor, it's already at a more advanced stage, and they are more likely to die from melanoma than a white person that has the same disease.
What kind of voice is this we're listening to here?
When they do go to the doctor, it's already at a more advanced stage, and they are more likely to die from melanoma than a white person that has the same disease.
Could be one of your Latino
voices. It sounds...
I think it's a woman.
It's not even... Really? See, I was...
Well, the first name is Flor, and that seems like a...
When they do go to the doctor, it's already at a more advanced stage, and they are more likely to die from melanoma than a white person that has the same disease.
Okay, I guess I was going to say the voice sounded a little cartoonish, but that's because I assumed when I first heard it, so it's a raspy, I assumed it was a male voice, but then it seems sort of pinched and high register, and so it seemed like a very cartoonish male voice. But if it's a woman...
When they do go to the doctor, it's already at a more advanced stage, and they are more likely to die from melanoma than a white person that has the same disease.
Anyway,
okay.
Dr. Mayoral says people of color should keep a close eye on lesions or moles that look unusual.
If they're not... symmetric, if they don't look the same on both sides of the lesion, if the borders are irregular, or if the color within the lesion is multiple, if there's shades of brown, shades of tan, black, sometimes reddish, that is a sign that it could be a melanoma.
I have no idea whether that is a man or a woman. I have one more time.
When they do go to the doctor, it's already at a more advanced stage, and they are more likely to die from melanoma than a white person that has the same disease.
Okay, it must be said. If that's a man, he sounds just like Slowpoke Rodriguez. I'm sorry. There's just no way I can't say it. But I think you may be right. Fleur does sound very much like a... That is a female name, I believe, as well as the name of a prominent Harry Potter character.
And I believe that that is good advice for anyone. No matter what your skin color, if your moles start looking unusual, have somebody check that out.
Is that what she was talking about? I really, if you put a gun to my head,
the second sound clip again.
If my life depended on it, I couldn't tell you what that soundbite actually said. I was just so fascinated by the sound of the voice.
If they're not symmetric, if they don't look the same on both sides of the lesion, if the borders are irregular, or if the color within the lesion is multiple, if there's shades of brown, shades of tan, black, sometimes reddish, that is a sign that it could be a melanoma.
Okay, that's... I guess that is good advice. I never really know what to... Now your plaid joke makes a lot more sense. It's not that I wasn't listening to you as such. It's just that I was busy processing all of the different kinds of accents that I could think of to try to deduce the gender of the speaker here. I never know what to look for in when they say, like, an irregular mole anyway. I mean, I guess she says, like, if she says it's different shades of... Well, everything is... by definition, it's a shade of brown. Like, what does that mean?
Usually if you have a mole, they generally tend to be static. Well, okay. You know, they are the same size, the same color. But if you have one and it starts to change color and becomes more reddish, becomes darker, if it becomes... And they also say if it's a weird shape, because that could be a sign of cancer.
Okay, let's just start with the basics here.
By the way, moles kind of creep me out and disgust me.
What I was going to ask is...
This whole story is icky.
I was going to ask, what is a mole? That sounds dumb, but I mean, what is that? Is it just like, is a bump a mole? In other words, you get women with like the beauty mark or whatever? Is that a mole?
Yes.
Okay, so a mole is just like any bump of skin?
It's a discoloration. They aren't, sometimes they're not necessarily bumps. Like I have a very small one on my jaw right here.
Right.
But it's not a bump. It's just a small circular.
Well, because many times with the beauty mark, like women will color that where it's a bump, but it's not colored. So is the distinguishing characteristic of a mole the fact that it's colored?
Yes.
Okay. So if it changes color, or if it's like shaped like a queue or something, you know?
If it's weirdly lumpy or something.
Or if it's polka dotted.
Yeah.
Then apparently that's the thing that you... Really, if you have to be told...
If it winks at you.
If it hisses. Feed me! If you got it after circling Zarquan 9 in your spacecraft. I don't even know what you're talking about now. But if you've got some weird, lumpy, misshapen section of your body that is constantly changing color and morphing, if you have to be told to go to the doctor about that, it seems like you're probably better off not reproducing anyway. So, really, I'm not going to play the soundbite again. I figure everybody can just sort of, you know, you play that by ear. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
I have continuing science news.
So. All right. Yeah, here's more of your science on the march for Monday.
A sailboat, largely constructed from 12,500 recycled plastic bottles, has completed a four-month journey across the Pacific Ocean meant to raise awareness about the perils of plastic waste. The Plastiki, a 60-foot catamaran, and its six crew weathered fierce ocean storms during its 8,000 nautical miles at sea. It left San Francisco on March 20th, stopping along the way at various South Pacific island nations, including Kiribati and Samoa. It docked Monday in Sydney Harbor. This is the best part of the journey so far, getting it in, expedition leader David de Rothschild
yelled. So say we all.
From the boat. A crowd of about 100 erupted into cheers after the Plastiki finally docked. De Rothschild, a descendant of the well-known British banking family, exchanged high fives and hugs with his crew, pumping his fists into the air in victory. It's been an extraordinary adventure.
Guys who sail piss me off. I know that they shouldn't. I know that there's no rational reason why they should. But the guys who, especially, I mean, I guess if it's a thing like you build in your garage, like if you're one of those Jerry Spice type guys, you just like build something in your garage out of plywood and then you sail it, I can get with that. I mean, when I see a guy on a boat, I just, my default setting is then to dislike him until he does something to prove that, you know, that he is worthy of, you know, of not having my scorn or contempt. Hmm. But doesn't this story do exactly the opposite? Doesn't this, in fact, prove the massive usefulness of plastic? Because without plastic, they would not have been able to sail across the ocean, Don. Plastic, in fact, was crucial for this mission.
Well, I believe they felt that it was a way to show that plastic can be effectively reused.
Yes, it can be used for any number of things. Right. Plastic is one of God's great creations.
So therefore, I guess the message is don't throw your plastic Coke bottle in the garbage. Make a boat out of it. Save 11,499 more of them and build a boat.
Become an obsessive compulsive nutcase. Build a floaty thing. And then call it the Plastiki. How is that spelled, by the way?
Plastiki.
All right. Never mind. I was going to talk more about the plastic bag ban that I guess we're getting at Fred Meyer, but that's
well,
okay.
It was made almost entirely of bottles, which were held together with an organic glue made from sugarcane and cashews.
Isn't glue made out of horses also organic?
Yes.
Okay. Just so long as we're all using the language properly. Here's Don Taylor.
Okay. That's all our science news for the
That's like when my wife, God love her, one of the smartest people I know, but she does seem to be a bit of a what's the scientific sucker for things like products that are labeled or organic, where they say that they're all natural or something. Because organic, it's just one of those words that you can no longer, it's become a weasel word. It's one of those words that no longer means what people think it means or what it actually means. Because, like you said, I'm gonna go to the store and get us a steak. Make sure you get it. Make sure it's organic. Unless you're eating a steak that's made out of formica, it's organic. Yeah. I mean, it's.
Well, we talked about this on Friday when we were eating the many bags of weirdly tasting chips on the Rick Emerson show, and I had seen a documentary about the formation of and the formulation of a snack food from idea through manufacture. And part of the documentary, they took a trip to the flavoring lab where they have all these guys in white coats with test tubes that come up with the flavors for things. And the difference between an artificial flavor and a natural flavor is that an artificial flavor is completely chemically created in a lab, whereas a natural flavor is made up of things that already exist in nature, like turpentine and glue and ammonia. I mean, one of the ingredients in blue cheese flavoring, natural blue cheese flavoring, was turpentine, in very small amounts, obviously. But it's because for something to be labeled a natural flavor, that doesn't mean it's the flavor that it says it is.
It just means that it means whatever is used to create that flavor existed naturally, even if it was like. That one of the things they use for tortilla chips is quicklime.
Yeah.
Which is sort of great. Which, and I know that that's the sort of thing that they put into a story to try to scare me off of eating the food. But I have to tell you that in a way, it sort of makes me feel even manlier and heartier about myself. What do you got there? Big bag of tortilla chips. They're made with quicklime. And it's just, it makes me feel like I'm in the Jim Rose Circus sideshow of my own life, where I'm just sort of eating a bag of nails in front of the camera. Here's Don Taylor.
Okay, I'm going to dig into the pile of sadness.
That's
here
great.
To get some
awesome.
Of these local stories out of the way. Yeah. One man was hospitalized after inhaling smoke during a house fire Monday in southeast Portland. Crews arrived at the 14500 block of Rhine Street at 6:50 a.m. this morning and found heavy flames coming from the front window of the home. Neighbors had helped one man out of the house before firefighters showed up. He was taken to Adventist Medical Center by paramedics. Firefighters were able to extinguish the fire. An investigator is trying to determine the cause. The Clackamas County Sheriff's Office says they're investigating a suspicious death after a man was found dead in a Wilsonville parking lot. Wilsonville police and Clackamas County deputies responded to an emergency call at the Boone's Junction Pub around 1 a.m. Saturday and a man down in the parking lot. They attempted to revive him, but he was not responsive. Authorities identified the man as 50-year-old Alan Lewis Wilson. Police questioned and released two people. The cause of his death is pending. And finally, Police in the Portland suburb of Hillsborough say they found a man and woman dead of gunshot wounds Friday evening in an apparent homicide-suicide. Lieutenant Henry Ryman said police responding after a 911 call from an unidentified woman found 66-year-old Wayne Coghill and 65-year-old Nyla Jean Coghill. The 911 caller told authorities that Wayne Coghill had said he was going to kill his wife and then commit suicide, and said his actions were due to his wife's medical condition. Police say his wife had apparently suffered strokes and seizures. There we go.
Well, you didn't lie. I thought that maybe you were sort of, you know, it was like when you swing three bats in the warm-up circle or something, that you were really selling the depressing nature of the stories, and then you were going to get into it, and we were going to say, that's not really so bad, but no, those were all terrible.
Yes, thank you.
Well, truth in advertising, I suppose. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock. Joining us today, Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian. He will be bringing a top five. The subject of which is entirely unknown to me. I know not what it will be. So we'll have a top five with Ryan White from The Oregonian. We have a clergy watch coming up today, also a taser watch, and a snuff watch, a Portland-centric snuff watch, no less, coming up today. What else? We'll talk about the whole leverage shoot, which is coming up tomorrow. So we'll talk about that later on today. And I got the big pile of stuff from this weekend. We'll talk about last night's Mad Men, our True Blood recap, and we'll have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's Pop Culture Authority will be the discussion of the K sound and why it is so comedically and kookily pleasing and so forth.
If in fact we have time to re-record it before the show, because it apparently is going to sound like I'm in some kind of star chamber far beneath the earth.
Well, you know, and if we don't have it recorded, Don, you'll just have to you'll have to do it O'Reilly style.
Oh,
that's right.
Ooh, a live read.
All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
A former Army lieutenant discharged from the service last week for being openly gay says he'll continue to fight for the repeal of the controversial Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Dan Choi says he is still smarting over his discharge.
He says,
I'm sorry, what is the...
Still.
All right. Wait, hold on one second here.
It's really painful. As much as you can prepare yourself for the ultimate paperwork that I got, saying that I'm fired, terminating my entire service, it still hurts.
All right, so that's that guy.
Choi says he's not ruling out a return to the military.
It's really,
I'm sorry.
There's no reason why I shouldn't want to go back or why I'd be afraid to go back. I've been serving openly for 17 months.
So, wait a minute. So he was, when he says serving openly, so it's like they knew he was gay the whole time and then just woke up one day and decided to boot him out? That's kind of what it sounds like to me.
There's no reason why I shouldn't want to go back or why I'd be afraid to go back. I've been serving openly for 17 months.
So here's the thing I always wonder about, that if you're in the military and you're gay, or even if you're not, you know, and they say, look, here's our next mission. It's called Operation Step Off a Boat and Be Shot in the Face. And you just say, I'm gay, totally gay. This guy and I were going to have sex right now. And then you just, you know. You were to claim or even act as though you were gay. Is that a thing where they just boot you out, or do they keep you long enough, you know, to like get you through whatever horrible thing it is that they've got in store, and then kick you out?
That I'm not sure. I did hear him interviewed a couple of months ago, and he's a really interesting guy. He graduated from West Point. He has degrees in environmental engineering and Arabic, and he served as a translator. And apparently, and he was talking about how the whole don't ask, don't tell thing, if you're going to boot out people for being gay, this has especially had a really hard, a big impact on areas like
translation.
And he, he served in Iraq during 2006, 2007, and he came out on the Rachel Maddow show in 2009 and started just coming out against the campaign and basically just saying, you know, I'm gay. This has been my service record.
What are you going to do about it?
This is all it, and basically is a way of bringing attention to it.
Well, I mean, so yeah, it's just one of those things that I've never quite understood how that worked, whether it was sort of an automatic, like if you just say, if they suspect you're gay, because it's the whole, you know.
Well, he's also been protesting publicly. He and another guy handcuffed themselves to the White House gate in March. You know, it's not like
So he was asking for it.
Yeah, he's pretty much been pushing it. He and the other guy, the two of them that have been working together to do this, they went on a hunger strike in May.
Yeah. Well, you know? Okay. So I mean, that's
they've
fine.
Been
I mean,
doing a lot of stuff to push it. So.
That's the only way decisions ever made is that, you know, some guy just finally forces the issue. So that's fine. But I was wondering if they think you're gay or there's that whole, you know, don't ask, don't tell. So I always wonder, like, if they're convinced that you're gay, but you just keep denying it.
Right. Well, that's the whole point.
If that's what it comes to.
Well, like, it's not even a matter of denying it. The whole point of don't ask, don't tell is that they don't ask. And you're not supposed to say anything. It's sort of, in its way, sort of a gentleman's agreement to be repressed. We know you're gay and you know you're gay. Just don't actually say anything about it or let us see you kissing somebody.
So I guess that was my thing. Is I guess I always wonder, but you're right. It probably is not as quantified as it would be like in the business world, because the military obviously is not a business or a democracy. You know, in the military they can kind of do whatever they. You are essentially their property. So. They probably can and do expel folks just for without cause or for no reason at all, just on a whim or on a suspicion. But isn't that one of those things? I hate to bring this up, but isn't that one of those things that Obama was going to get rid of?
Yeah.
I thought that we were going to get rid of don't ask, don't tell, and let people serve.
Well, he was also going to get rid of like Gitmo.
I don't want to draw anybody's attention to the fact that he may have lied to you to get your vote. I don't want you to be alarmed. Just
there's a few
speak quietly
things,
among yourselves.
There's a few things on his to-do list that he doesn't seem to have actually
keep promises
yet.
Then number two is just see number one. All right, here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Search and rescue teams began to scour Mount Hood National Forest wilderness Sunday as they looked for a missing camper. Robert Bissell, who lives in Washington, left July 12th for a fishing and camping trip. 7 days later, his brother Michael went up to the campsite to check on him, but he wasn't there. Michael Bissell left a note on his brother's car and asked him to contact family when he could. Friday, Michael Bissell returned to the campsite again, noticed everything was in the same place as his last visit. Searchers have responded in the area, started a search, and crews from several agencies continued to search this morning.
He's been gone for 2 weeks. I don't want to rain on anybody's parade or anything.
Yeah, July. Well, he left July 12th.
All right.
And then a week later, his brother went, I haven't seen him.
And then a week after that, everything was still untouched and unmoved. Was he off the path? Of course he was off the path. When they say, well, this is, you know, but it's that you noted before we came on the air today, I think you, not that it's not tragic and a loss of life or whatever, but you said that, you know, the first great, in fact, you might have said it at the top of the show, you know, the first hot weekend of the summer or one of the hottest weekends of summer. So, of course, the drownings begin. And, you know, we'll have another one of those this winter, you know, when you get some Jagoff and his friends who decide to climb Mount Hood, you know, despite the fact that, you know, the tracking device, what do we need that for? We'll be fine, you know. And then it's like we just find them like Nanook of the North, you know, when the spring thaw comes around.
Of course, that happens in the summer, too. You get a lot of people who decide that they can, like, you know, climb up Mount Hood or whatever, wearing, like, shorts and tennis shoes and carrying, you know, a plastic jug of water. And that's all they need.
No, well,
it's summertime. What could happen?
Well, you know, and I've told my wife this, and she knows, because she's, you know, she's very, very into the outdoors, and she, you know, hiking and camping and whatever. But I tell her every time she leaves the house, I'm like, you stay on the trail. Like, if you stay off the path, I'm not going to
tell her that every time she leaves the house.
Yeah, but she goes,
stay on the trail.
Every time. But, you know, but when she and her friends have climbed Mount Hood, and they've gone, like, you know, 15 miles into some, I don't know, some godforsaken no man's land of wherever. And I always just say, like, there is a path, and then there is everything that is not the path. And if you are not on the path, if you deviate from what the man tells you is an acceptable hiking area and you are lost, I will not send anything to look for you. I will not ask the state to have a helicopter come find you. I will not pay for any rescue costs. You will deserve whatever happens to you, and you will become a snuff watch on my radio program. So it's really up to you, sister. It's not that I wouldn't miss her. I'm just saying... look.
Well, I warned her.
Nature hates you. And as my one of the few things my father told me growing up that actually had some veracity to it, that held some water, is my dad said. He said, you have to respect nature because it doesn't respect you. And it's one thing if you're just an idiot, you know, if you're just some Nimrod, you know, or a child or something. And I mean, then that's one thing. But, you know, if you're a thinking individual, if you're a reasonably intelligent adult, and my wife's an extremely intelligent person, God gave you the brain for many, for many reasons. One of them is to keep you on the path and out of, a forest where you might, die. So you deviate from the path, you are hoisted by your own petard at that point. I'm just saying. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to you at some point if we ever have to cover my wife's death on this program.
All right.
And if I don't seem to be exhibiting the proper display of sympathy, it'll be because she did something to bring it on herself. Let's have no illusions about that. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Let's do a little entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program. The Legion of News, yes?
And would you also grab the pages off of the printer for me?
I'm sorry, and I was confusing my pre-sale with my billboard here. So this is Legion of News coming up at 1 o'clock. It is the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemerson.com. With your entertainment news for Monday, July 26, 2010, this is Dawn Taylor.
Zsa Zsa Gabor's husband says the actress remains in critical condition after receiving a blood transfusion.
Dead.
Prince Frederick von Anhalt said Saturday the doctors are hopeful new medication will help the 93-year-old actress recover.
Embalming medication.
She received the transfusion Friday night. Van Anhalt says his wife is conscious and able to squeeze his hand and whisper a few words on Saturday morning. Gabor broke her hip after she fell out of her bed last weekend at her Bel Air home. She had hip replacement surgery Monday.
What is it with old people and hips?
Hips are
hips the weak link in the human?
I think so.
I mean, not that we don't get problems elsewhere. Obviously,
knees and hips, baby.
Is that really it? Is it? Well, because you got the bum knee, but that's like. But isn't that a congenital thing? Like, weren't you born with that?
I have arthritis. I was not born with it. It went bad over the years. Also, I had a number of injuries to it playing softball when I was younger.
Well, that was going to be my question. In other words, I'm not saying you're defective, but in other words,
no, I'm defective.
But I guess my point is that the arthritis is not not typically something that sets on it until later. So that is not a...
I have freakishly bad early arthritis.
Yeah, so that's not the normal cause of events. But just all things being equal, it seems like hips just... They just snap like twigs in old people.
Well, you get more brittle. Your bones get more brittle when you become older. And when you fall, odds are very good that you're going to land on your hip. You're going to hit there. And, I think that's a big impact point where you've got a large bone going into the pelvis. So the old people crack their pelvis a lot, too. And it's for the same reason.
I don't want to crack pelvis.
No. Well, when you get old, don't fall down.
Speak for everybody. I'll do my best. I'll just tether myself, duct tape myself to a wall somewhere.
Get those robot pants we were talking about a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I guess it's either fall on your hip or fall flat on your face. So I guess that's maybe why they do that. Or you put your hands out or something
right.
And then you just shatter your arms.
Exactly.
Being old seems like the least fun thing ever.
Make sure you get lots of calcium now that you're still... you're not really still growing.
I'm young and spry.
It's too late, but
no,
yeah.
My doctor already said that you're not getting any younger, Richard. All right, thanks so much. Here's Dawn Taylor.
President Barack Obama will appear on the female chat show The View on Thursday in what the ABC network said was the first appearance by a sitting U.S. president on a daytime TV talk show.
That's just embarrassing.
Oh, Mr. Obama will join the ladies. Press Secretary Robert Gibbs says he doesn't know what topics they're going to cover during the show.
I have no idea what they're going to ask, and I presume the president will answer their questions.
So that must be...
yeah.
I'm just trying to wrap my brain around... I mean, doesn't... look, I don't mean to be Johnny Reflective here or something, but don't you have a country to run? I mean, don't we have like a bunch of wars and stuff we're fighting? It seems like carving time out of your schedule to go hang out with Elizabeth Hasselbeck maybe should be priority, 5,000 on your list?
Well, I'm thinking that perhaps some of the people who work for him and with him have noticed that a lot of people, like, say, you and I, who were huge supporters of him at one time, have been noticing that he hasn't been following through on some of his promises.
And by the way, that wasn't you and I. That's just you.
We may be a little disillusioned with Mr. Obama. This seems like one of those things that they're, just trying to bump his ratings so that people will like him more again.
Well, here's the dumb thing about it is although I have no such disillusion, because that to be disillusioned implies that you were illusioned at one point, and I like to think that I wasn't, but I... My thing is, though, that I will actually watch this just to see how he interacts with What's-Her-Guts, with Elizabeth Hasselbeck, who is hilarious and horrifying sort of all at once. But I will absolutely watch it just for that reason. In fact, I have to tell you that of There's Elizabeth Hasselbeck, there's Joy Behar, there's Barbara Walters, who doesn't seem like is actually on all the time at this point.
Oh, well, she will be back for the Obama visit. She's been out. She had heart surgery.
Okay, yeah, because
so she's been away for a while.
Because they've had a kind of, like, that show is such a rotating cast, it seems like to me. And it's sort of, they've kind of cycled through a whole bunch of people sitting in the Barbara Walters chair. So, anyway.
Well, in any event, when is that actually happening? Because I will watch
Thursday.
That.
All right, so yeah, I'll set my TiVo for that. The Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock today over at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor.
Terminator vet Linda Hamilton is joining Chuck in a recurring guest role as the title character's long-missing mother. Executive producer Josh Schwartz said at Comic-Con in San Diego that the casting was inspired by fan suggestions online. She's been such an icon as an action female badass mom, Schwartz said. The fans put it out there and she heard about it and was like, I heard I'm Chuck's mom. He said Hamilton's role would be a huge part of the season. She will be briefly introduced in the season 4 opener, which will also include Olivia Munn as a guest star.
I got to say that I've actually never seen Chuck, and that's one of those shows that people kept telling me that I should watch it, and then I just felt like it was so far along that there was no point in even trying to get on board, and so
I just haven't. It was kind of cute the first season, but it got old really fast. It wore through its premise fairly quickly. And though I know people who are just devoted to it, but I got quite bored with it.
And that is the thing with so many shows. You and I talked about Monk being like that.
Yeah.
Where the premise is really interesting, but then it just doesn't sustain, or the premise does its job and gets them X number of viewers out of the gate, and once that's done its job, then it's just they just sort of figure they can move on from it and not actually, they don't have to sustain the premise because it's no longer necessary to get them viewers. So, all right. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is coming up today at 1 o'clock. We'll talk to Ryan White, Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian. He'll be bringing the top five with him. Also, Aaron Duran and The Week in Geek. We'll have a snuff watch today, a taser watch, a religious nutcase watch, clergy watch, which are not actually the same thing. And we'll have another installment of Pop Culture Authority today. We'll talk about why the letter K is so amusing in terms of comedy, such as in Akron and Schenectady. Don't forget that Legion of News is brought to you today by folks such as The Cleaning Solution. Mr. Michael Bainey, who is a longtime listener, is one of the proud sponsors of... You just threw that news away with the most... The cleanest look of disgust and hate on your face. It was sort of like a scorn and dismissive contempt as you threw that news across the table into some sort of an ever-growing massive discard pile.
It was the Tonight on TV stuff. And first of all, there's nothing worth even talking about on TV, and we're running short on time for it anyway, so I just went, screw you, Tonight on TV.
It was
and tossed it into the pile.
It was like you would just it was like you were sniffing the milk to see if it was actually worth pouring into your coffee and then decided against it and then angrily hurled it down the drain. Well, in any event, Michael Bainey is the owner and proprietor of The Cleaning Solution right here in Portland, and he can be contacted at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. And they are a local business, as I said, to the point that they actually, they buy their products from locally owned businesses rather than buying their products that they use. All of the things they use when they come to your house or your business to clean your carpet or your upholstery, your tile, whatever it is, those cleaning products, whenever possible, they actually get those from businesses here locally as opposed to from somewhere else in the country. They do stain removal, and they also do maintenance as well. So don't think that it's just, just a guy to contact. If you got some specific stain or some specific cleaning job or some sort of a spot job needs done on your rug, they can actually do the maintenance as well to keep it looking as good as the day you bought it. So you can find out more about them by contacting The Cleaning Solution in the person of Michael Bainey at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. Let's do like two more here. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk. Are we done with entertainment news?
We are indeed.
There we go. Here's Don Taylor.
A man jumped 18 floors to his death, narrowly missing New York Starbucks customers who were leisurely enjoying coffee below. Todd Crockett, 37, leaped from his Upper East Side apartment window at about 6 p.m. local time on Sunday and landed on the patio of the Starbucks at the base of his building. Rachel Mullen, 34, was reading a magazine when Crockett landed only feet away from her, as reported
Jesus
in the
God
New York
Almighty.
Post. It was like a big bang.
Did you hear something?
He almost fell on top of me, she said.
Somebody leave a door open?
Everybody started yelling and screaming to get out of the way. I literally had blood on me.
Is it sprinkling?
I feel lucky he didn't fall on top of me. She added, do I wish I'd picked a different Starbucks today? Oh, yeah. Crockett was described as a quiet tenant who kept an immaculate apartment.
Except for the loud splatting sounds he sometimes made.
According to building superintendent Jose Alicea, who said it was not the first suicide in the building, he described the incident as, quote, totally gruesome.
Okay, let's go out on that one, shall we? I will say this about that. That is the one thing, not the one thing, but that is one of the things that will take me out of a movie is when they show a guy jumping off a building and then they cut. And even if they show like a little pool of blood where he's just largely intact, because you know that's not the case.
No.
We've covered a couple of jumpers in our time here at, at the Emerson Show. Like there was a guy who jumped off the Paramount Hotel a couple years ago, like in 2007. I used to know the room, too. 1403, or is that John Cusack film?
Humans are basically just big sacks of meat and water.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's... Yeah.
On that note, you've been listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes your way to... today, but actually comes your way next. Right over there at rickemerson.com. That's where you can join us. Damn you, you've thrown me off. My concentration's gone all wonky. This program, Legion of News, will be archived at iTunes, also at pdx.fm and at legionofnews.com. So thank you for joining us. Our broadcast now comes to an end. Join us again tomorrow. Won't you please? We are broadcasting live from the studios of the Emerson News Network, as we do every day. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor. Advanced Technology and Magic brought to you by Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Egler. And our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. You've been listening to another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.